And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we are lucky enough to have in studio, as I promised, Jeff Hogan. And he's the managing director and co-founder of the Judy Group. And you're going to talk about AI with us a little bit, Jeff, and healthcare, right?
I am indeed. Really excited to be here with you this morning.
Very excited. I've known Jeff for a long time, and I saw this story came across my desk about how much AI upcoding is costing employers. And I saw that he actually read the same information from the same Garner company. And I was like, I'm wondering if you might have some insights. And you do, don't you, Jeff?
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about in this hour.
Oh, boy.
So what is so let's talk. Where do you want to start? Do you want to talk a little about your background so people know where your foundation is, and then talk about how AI is what's happening?
Sure. First, I'll do a thanks to you, Eric. When my wife and I moved down from the Boston area 32 years ago to extend one of our businesses down here, you guys were Tab, and you specifically were instrumental, I think, in me putting in my first two computers and really extending our technology profile and helping us to be successful in this market.
Well, thank you. It was really simpler back then. We just turned on the computer and told you to reboot it.
It was simpler. It was simpler. So real quick, I've been involved in healthcare for literally 41 years.
Wow.
I'd say the most unique aspect of my background is that I've worked in pretty much every area of the healthcare ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? Mm-hmm. I've worked on the demand side with purchasers and employers and helping to set that up.
Yeah.
I've worked on the supply side a lot with health systems and primary care organizations and digital health. I've also worked with what we call the BUCAs, Blue Cross, United, Cigna, Aetna. There's an H as well, Humana, that's silent in designing products with them. So having been inside of that as well.
Yeah.
So having worked in all of the different areas, have a unique perspective into the dysfunctional healthcare system.
Yeah.
So supply and demand. And right now, we're in a really cool place. So technology, and this is a technology show, so we'll go there quickly, has finally created the opportunity for the purchasers of healthcare to have some agency to say, hey, this is what we need.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we want. What you're doing is wrong, perhaps, in certain cases, and to actually look at their data and to align supply and demand in a more appropriate fashion.
Gotcha.
The AI discussion is really important right now because the supply side of healthcare, care delivery, health systems, and what have you have really jumped on it quicker than the demand side and have developed products that allow them to optimize their revenue more appropriately. And I'd love to talk about that in more detail. But the demand side now suddenly, and that means even small groups and middle market groups, which we have a lot of here in Connecticut, really have the opportunity finally to do better in a place where healthcare is now close to 20% of our GDP.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, the thing that surprised me about this AI and how they were focusing on it is we've talked about stories where doctors are using AI within the actual process of having an appointment with them and having the AI scribe and what have you and getting a lot of it wrong, having some hallucinations. But the idea, the hope would be that they're going to actually apply that AI to your healthcare. But these folks are spending more of their money, like 90% of it, on how to actually make sure they're billing as much as they can. 2.5 times of the AI is going towards that type of approach. They're 2.5 times more prevalent as far as how AI spending is happening in this industry than most industries. They are focusing on billing.
That's correct. So we call it revenue optimization.
Yes.
We've seen this for decades in healthcare.
Yeah.
That health systems really are focused on this, and something that we'll talk about here that AI brings forth is this whole notion of share of wallet. If we look at health systems around the country, and there's really good data on this, that the average health system, that the predominant average health system, only gets 51 52% share of wallet in their predominant area, which is really an interesting number. Yeah. I found that fascinating. And there is competition, meaning they lose patients that are going to other systems for various reasons. Certainly in Connecticut, we have tremendous fragmentation because this is a big fee-for-service marketplace. It's extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. There's very little primary care investment, which is a good indicator of fragmentation and lack of continuity and longitudinal care and things like this. The share of wallet thing is a big deal. And the traditional use of these revenue optimization things, the strategies for revenue optimization, if we're still only at 52% share of wallet for specific health systems, they clearly have the opportunity to do better. And that means getting a consumer, meaning a healthcare consumer who really wants to go there for various reasons, rather than to say, this is too expensive, or I don't like the system, or I haven't been treated appropriately. So AI has an effect and opportunity there. And we see it around the country where health systems are now direct contracting with employers on specific things, typically what we call episodic things, knees and hips and babies and shoulders and cabbages and all of the things that every employer has a high volume of, but huge variation in cost and quality. In these situations, hospitals, health systems have the opportunity to contract directly with employers to give them certitude or predictability around cost, quality, outcomes, patient experience.
That's nice. We like that.
It's not only nice, but financially it makes sense as well.
So my buddy and I always talked about this. Like he wanted to get a colonoscopy, but he couldn't find out what the cost was going to be. Correct. Nobody would tell him the cost.
Correct.
And that does seem to be a very odd thing in this world where we don't know what it's going to cost. So you're saying that these actual services are going to be directly to the employer, and the hospital is going to say, here's what it costs for a knee.
Right.
Period.
So this was initiated curiously by some public policy with a piece of legislation back in 2021 with a barn-burning name, Ready, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
Yeah. and so the CAA 2021, among other things, said to employers, anybody that has an employer-sponsored group health plan that they're managing, fully insured, self-funded.
Self-funded. This is not for the most of us.
This is for everybody. This is fully insured, self-funded.
Oh, gotcha. I missed the two. Okay.
Small group, middle market, large
everybody.
Group. Really doesn't matter.
Okay.
It says there is someone in your group, typically the CFO or the CEO or the owner or whatever the case might be, who now has fiduciary responsibility over how the dollars are spent into the plan. Mm-hmm. Why? You write that off. Your plan is a tax write-off. However, your employees are contributing to the cost of that plan.
Yes.
So this fiduciary thing basically says you must, not can, you must act only in the best interests of your members, your employees and dependents, because you're managing this plan.
That makes sense to me.
On their behalf. So here's this thing, this strange fiduciary responsibility. You know, typically in most groups, the HR folks are the ones that, you know, get a broker involved and all of this sort of thing. So it was a new thing. And as part of the law, it said, hey, look, you have to remove any language in your contracts with Blue Cross or Aetna or whomever it happens to be called gag clauses that keep you from receiving data on your population. Well, why is that important? Because that data shows you the needs and wants and desires and interests of your unique population.
Right.
And as such, when you get that data, you have to make your decisions on behalf of those members based on that data, the uniqueness of your population. Where are they going? Who are they going to? Are they getting bad quality? Is there fragmentation? What's the prevalence in acuity of disease process?
Are we
apportioning the right assets there? And unfortunately, what happened is that people looked at this law and they realized that they had that fiduciary had a personal liability.
Uh-oh.
His or her house, the ski house and the, you know, the lake house was at risk.
Oh,
and for public companies, the boards of directors had liability here. So it really raised up the interest suddenly in focusing on these health plans and what was being spent, second largest expenditure after wages, you know, for most folks. So what it has created is a marketplace for purchasers, really, and for others like health systems to take that data, take the risk away from populations, not be so dependent on networks of the insurance companies and things like that.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a lot to digest. Holy moly. Mm-hmm. So you're basically fiduciarily responsible. You got to give your people the right care. And you actually have the data to find out if they're not getting it. And then if you don't take action on that, you could be impacted as the fiduciary of the plan, right? So if someone's going out there not getting a good knee replacement, paying three times as much as Bob's paying, then you can see there's a problem there, and you're supposed to take action as the fiduciary of that plan, right?
Or in many cases, 6, 7, 8 times as much.
Is it a gold-plated knee?
And it's not just that. I mean, think about specialty drugs and medical pharmacy, all of these different components. So really, you know, what happened is that most employers really have no insight into any of these types of things.
Right.
And it's an anomaly in the U.S. that employers are sponsoring your health care. So here, suddenly, much like what happened with retirement plans back in 2012, the same type of fiduciary thing was imposed. It completely transformed the industry, the retirement industry.
Yeah, you have to actually be in best interest of your people.
Exactly.
Strange concept, Jeff.
Exactly.
We got to step over for a quick break. We'll get more with Jeff Hogan talking about how AI, data, and your healthcare is being impacted these days by the technology. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and it is Saturday, as usual, and you guys thought our electricity costs would make your hair hurt. We're talking with Jeff Hogan, talking about how AI is involved in our healthcare systems and how it hopefully can improve patient outcomes and lower costs. The story I talked about, how it was possibly generating more revenue for the provider. So, Jeff, let's get back into this a little bit. So where do you want to go next with explaining how AI is going to maybe improve outcomes, or where do you want to go with it?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just continue quickly on this regulatory thing and, you know, where it's taken us. I was in Washington, D.C. for the last 2 days working on some legislation and regulation. So that whole thing that I described to you on fiduciary responsibility and what have you has progressed. We have even more regulatory stuff and settlements happening right now around transparency.
Yes.
Everybody talks about transparency, and curiously, nobody really knows what it means in healthcare because we haven't had it in the past. But where we are now, we have a convergence, what I call a convergence. I've never seen it before, a bipartisan convergence. Imagine that, bipartisan convergence around how important it is exactly to focus on uncompetitive healthcare prices.
Mm-hmm.
Kaiser came out this week. The number one midterm issue for Americans is the cost of healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, it is roughly double the trend factor and what have you. So everyone is really, again, convening around this concept in very similar to what we described in the retirement industry by requiring disclosure from vendors on their direct and indirect compensation, brokers, PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, the third-party administrators. What are you making on these
to manage this stuff?
Not only to manage it, But just to merchandise, you know, digital health solutions, do we even need them? You know, does the employer even need these things? I spoke with a Fortune 500 company yesterday that has 50 different digital point solutions, from infertility to MSK to diabetes to you name it. They had 50 of these, none of which are integrated into their data to show whether they're being used or not. They're paying for them. But,
oh, you're kidding.
But this is the norm. There is no integration. There's no ROI. So all of these converging pieces of regulation and legislation require that the employer, for any of their vendors, it's called a prohibited transaction, get direct and indirect compensation disclosure, number one and number two, see if the fees are reasonable, and three, whether they're doing anything in the plan, whether there's any ROI back. So back to AI. And this is so important. You know, most employers really don't know anything about the health system at all. They really don't know anything about their own group or population, those types of needs. They've relied on third parties, mostly conflicted third parties who are getting paid by the carrier to place that business, have really no clinical knowledge to speak of or analytic knowledge on any of these types of things. And curiously, since CAA 2021, we're now seeing the advent, finally, of very simple, inexpensive AI tools that will help the purchaser to not only look at their contracts and their provisions, and but also to look at their data and say, these are your priorities, these are your problems, and to give them insight so that they can act on these things. And I think that is a critical thing that we're looking at. I'll also tell you, before we get to the supply side and upcoding and all of these types of things, to help the employer to fix their contracts so that the third-party administrator is required, if in fact AI tools are being used against them, to be able to interpret what those things are doing to them.
Right. So everyone's going to start battling with the AI. You're going to figure out if your contract is nailing you, the third-party administrator is going to figure out how to go battle back to get those things back in. It's going to be this big database in the sky fighting over the approaches to who can make the most money. While meanwhile, we, the patients, are like, what is happening to us?
Exactly.
So, well, we'll talk more about it with Jeff Hogan. Clearly, we got the right guy for the job here. Talking about how AI is impacting our health, our health care, our costs. Jeff has been doing it for 40 years?
41 years. Yeah.
You wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it. You definitely wouldn't know it. So we're going to be here until 11 o'clock taking your computer calls, comments, concerns, but not really. We're talking about AI and healthcare. We'll be right back. All right. We are back and we are talking AI and healthcare with Jeff Hogan from the Judy Group. And he's the director and co-founder. And I've known him for a very long time. And we've never, this is the first time I've ever talked shop with him ever. I'm glad I never did before. Holy moly. But we were talking in the break a little bit about something that is going on with how TPAs are paid and how organizations may not be paying attention to some of the benefits they could have been getting themselves had they been paying attention. I didn't really set it up that well, but what do you think?
It was pretty good. Okay. You know, I'll take it.
And yeah.
Think about it. Think about a company, and we're talking here after wages. This is the second biggest thing that employers pay for. And think about it as a variable in your budget. You know, your trend factor, the inflationary factor is double CPI or triple. And for some employers here in Connecticut, 20, 30%. How do you deal with that? How does your cost of services, Eric, catch up with taking care of that? And why do you have a plan anyway to attract and keep employees? So there has been nobody looks at their contracts. You know, the CFO has kicked this over to an HR person, they're really nice people. They want to take care of the employees and the dependents and things like that. But typically the HR person isn't trained in finance or risk or accountability or any of these types of things. And, you know, we shared during the break a story about a group that we've worked on in the last couple of weeks. A very large group, more than 60,000 employees who hadn't gotten to bid in 15 years. Okay.
What?
15 years had not gone out to bid. And we see this out there and ask for some help to write their RFP and things like this. So we asked to analyze their contract. So every employer has, especially if they're self-funded, a contract, often called an administrative services agreement, with the carrier, which has all of the language and terms and prices and anything you could imagine associated with the services they're going to provide, the PBM agreement, the pharmacy benefit manager agreement, the provider agreement, the network agreement, not in this case, but in most cases, stop loss agreements as well. They didn't have these contracts. Okay. Ooh. This is a big, this is the norm. And I'll, if you're an employer out there listening, do you have your contracts? Have you looked at them?
Right.
You should. And so after running these contracts, and we used AI on the contractual provisions and benchmarking and what have you, something that we found was over the course of that 15 years, there was the boiled frog syndrome, meaning that which was being taken away from the group in provisions and costs just got worse and worse and worse because nobody was watching.
Yikes.
And we discovered almost $19 million in drug rebates that were being taken by the third-party administrator for a $2 administrative TPA credit.
Thank you so much.
And you know, the CFO quickly discovered this as part of it and was appalled, obviously.
Right.
But this is the opportunity. You know, a lot of this sounds really hard and really complex. It is, and it's purposefully complex so that you can't figure this out. But what we're saying here is that you can now.
Now with AI, you can.
You got it. There are tools to be deployed here that will really help you to bring money back into your organization, to give a better plan, to give better contracts and things of this nature. Just one more comment here.
Yeah, yeah.
41 years in the business again, worked on a state plan for state employees, not here in Connecticut, but in another state. And their gross family premium this year is over $70,000. Just to give you an idea, okay?
That's some that's some gold-plated plan, though.
It is, but I mean, think about that. That's more than some of their people make in wages a year. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah,
that is crazy. Yeah. Speaking of that, too, I mean, I work for TAB, right? But my wife works for a large insurance company, so we chose that healthcare plan. So we pay premiums on my being on that plan, but then that company still charges me an additional fee of $150 per pay period because I have another plan I could choose. Okay. That seems awful, right? Yes. So we're paying the premium and I'm paying a penalty for not choosing another plan that would be available to me.
Yes.
So it's double the cost for the privilege of being part of that plan. And the reason I say this because it's within the conversation is I can't do the comparison to figure out what deal would be better.
Correct.
And I'm a pretty sharp guy. I can't figure that out. Should I save X number of dollars by going to the plan offered by my company, or should I stay paying the penalty by going with the plan offered by hers as the family plan?
Yeah, so it's
crazy.
It's a great, and I appreciate you doing that, like a setup for me. That was nice of you to do that. So, you know, the beauty is, if you think about it, the whole notion of the healthcare consumer, at least for the 40 years I've been in the business, is an oxymoron. It doesn't exist. Who's the consumer? The purchaser of healthcare is really who the insurance company has gone to buy care. They really didn't care too much about you or your dependents. In fact, if you want a really interesting exercise after this, go and look up the net promoter scores for the insurance companies. Okay. They're generally single digit or lower compared to the net promoter score for your favorite company out there. I don't care who it is. Yeah. You know, you will be appalled.
You'd be shocked.
That is changing. Okay.
Good.
That is changing. The consumer experience has now become a really important thing, not only to the insurance companies, but think about it. For the employer, they must act in the best interest of their member.
Yeah.
They need to use those tools. So the AI tools can be used for your evaluation that you just asked about.
Maybe. You need to know where to target the data, and I don't know where the data is to target.
And it's great. So we are creating a marketplace for that. We're seeing a marketplace for that. Even for things like you went and had your knee done, and you get this bill and says pay $2,000, and you say, well, how do I figure this out? Now, under this new legislation, they must give you an itemized bill. Let's say you get that.
Mm-hmm.
There are AI tools for consumers to help them to see whether, in fact, those are appropriate or not at this point.
And that's a good thing, too.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
That's a lot of stuff that goes on with this type of stuff. So we want to talk a little about the healthcare side, the actual provider side, right?
Yes.
So what do you want to bring up as far as how the upcoding is costing us or impacting us, I should say.
So upcoding is a big deal. I told you a little while ago that health systems use rev cycle enhancement tools, rev cycle management and what have you, and they have for years and years and years.
Sure.
And for listeners, you know, who have no sense of the cost or quality of health systems, there's a really good piece of data that you can look at. It's called the RAND, Hospital Transparency Report. Comes out every couple of years. It's open source data. And they basically—
We can link that, Dennis.
You can. And it's really good. It it shows you the cost and quality differences between and among health systems in your area.
Mm-hmm.
I actually worked with Vicky Veltri at the time, who ran the Office of Health Strategy in Connecticut a number of years ago, to bring RAND to Connecticut for the first time. And it's really, really helpful. You can look at it and see the differences in cost and quality.
Mm-hmm.
Most importantly, you can see the variation in cost and quality inside of health systems, between the oncology department and musculoskeletal and any of the different areas of the hospital. It lets you get a look at this.
So that's interesting, Jeff. So I've got a procedure that I have to have done. I work with my doctor, and the problem is the doctor only participates with Yale. So even though I've done the RAND study and it turns out Yale's 15 times more expensive, I'm just saying, for example, I'm not saying that they are, 15 times more expensive, I can't go there unless I punt my doctor, because my doctor only can do it there.
That's correct.
That's another little bit of a weird scheme that's going on here, where you have privileges.
That's correct.
Right? And so are they paying a fee for access? Are they like allowed, disallowed? How, if you do all this great work as on the RAND and you find out that Hartford Hospital is the most cost effective and you say, doctor, can you do it over there? No, they won't let me.
Yeah.
What is all that?
So if you're a member and this is a concern and it has become a concern, this is something that gets expressed back to your employer, because you want them to be purchasing services and access that's in the best interests of their members as well. In Connecticut, we have some of the best ambulatory surgical centers in the country, you know, that are doing knees and hips and shoulders and, you know, all of this sort of thing. So this is inciting consumers to actually shop not only for their doctor, but for cost and quality and these types of things. Right now, I mean, this is a network state, so it's very, very difficult to break out of it, but it gives you the ability to be informed. Also, part of CAA was having each of the health systems do their cash prices and to post those, which you actually have access to right now. So you're seeing the evolution of these things, this whole notion of transparency as well. I'll also tell you there are AI tools out there now where you can check on your doctor. How many of those surgeries have they done? What is the quality? Have there been issues associated with that? This is something we've never had access to before. So it's really pretty neat.
So that's the thing. So everyone thinks I'm against AI. I am not against AI. The idea here is that data centers and AI can produce results that give us, the consumers, the power, which, of course, we never had before. We get access to the information, access to the understanding of the contracts, access to understanding the pricing, as long as the laws force that, the fiduciary concept. If the laws didn't do that, we wouldn't have access. That getting rid of that gag concept in the laws is really, it's up to the legislators to make sure that this data is open and not closed. Correct. Correct?
That's correct.
And that's the big change that
occurred. That's correct. And employers still, even though this legislation has passed, are still fighting to get their data. And once they get it, they don't know what to do with it. And, you know, so we have a long cycle that will occur here.
Yeah.
You know, having those data rights, how often do we get them? What can we do with that data? These are all things that are really in development. Nature abhors a vacuum and it's going to fill it. But we're finally, for the first time in my career, seeing the makings of a true healthcare marketplace that hasn't occurred in the past.
An actual market with actual pressures of an actual market.
Perfectly said.
All right. Perfectly well, that said. Perfectly said. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break, get out to pay some bills, and then get back with Jeff Hogan of the Judy Group talking about how AI is impacting our healthcare. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and we are talking AI, healthcare, insurance costs with Jeff Hogan from the Judy Group. And Jeff, let's get right back into it. Where do you want to go next?
So let's talk a little bit about upcoding and how health systems are using it. And I think that's important. I work all over the country. I've worked in 47 states now. haven't hit them all, but get the opportunity to see how these things perform in other areas as well. Connecticut is a high quality health system area. We're quite lucky right up into Boston and down into New York, but it's also one of the most expensive in the country as well. So, I mean, if we look here, we have Hartford and Yale. Hartford has become one of the highest quality systems, I think, in the country. Mm-hmm. The CEO has driven quality throughout the system, but it is a very systemic system. I mean, it is highly integrated, much in the same way that the BUCAs are as well. And, you know, just using some public sources, doing some research, Hartford Healthcare is using a lot of these AI tools for optimization, and it's a big part of it. I just looked up a few. SIFT Healthcare is a payments and intelligence coding and denial risk system that's being used for advanced analytics for rev cycle management. Abridge is an Ambient clinical intelligence with rev cycle. So again, you know, doctors hate charting, nurses hate it too, and what have you. But as you said at the beginning, well, we're listening to what's going on in this, and maybe we can code for this and what have you. And, you know, generally, if you think about upcoding, you know, the health systems are businesses too. So people who are sicker can be charged more. So the prevalence and acuity of disease process, even moving people out of beds for higher acuity patients that you can charge more for, that's a thing. So
that's a thing?
That is a thing.
Like, oh, we're going to make more money on Eric. Let's get him up there and leave Bob over here to sit and
or get him out.
Or get him out.
Quickly. So AI doc is another one. Holistic hospital optimization, H2O. Just giving you some names on some of these. Yeah. You could take a look at them yourself. K-Health has this patient GPT. It's embedded in the patient portal. It's in their patient medical records. Vitia. These are some of the, you know, publicly announced things that Hartford's using. If I look at Yale, they're more the traditional EHR Epic system that has AI tools. And obviously, your electronic health record, medical record has optimization built into that as well. Even if you look at the primary care organizations, and Connecticut has few primary care resources. We want everybody to go to the specialists who, you know.
I love my primary care doctor. Yep. She's amazing.
But it's really hard for people to find primary care physicians. And there's not an incentive for persons to go into primary care anymore. So the APRN is really becoming the primary care of the future to create this longitudinal thing. So really, you know, to think about it, the AI tools are being used to create higher severity, greater utilization, move into what we call DRGs. DRGs are used for episodic hospital-based care.
And one code to rule them all.
One code to rule all of the stuff that's to be included, but then to increase the severity of that big payment as well. So you can see from what we're talking about, you know, a CHRO at eBay, Rob, said to me, you know, I've been trying to figure all this out. Mm-hmm. And he said, I feel like I'm playing checkers while they're playing chess. And I thought it was a really good line because it's really representative. So the, you know, the comment here, knowing we're short on time, is that the AI marketplace for revenue optimization is pretty sophisticated, whereas on the demand side, we have some tools and they're getting developed, but few of the purchasers are using them because they haven't been activated at this point. And I'll tell you, for you know, purchasers of healthcare, you have the opportunity to actually write into your contracts for your TPA notice that if these tools are being used, that you want that coding examined, that that becomes part of their process to ensure that you're not getting overbilled. And we've seen the numbers. The increase in costs associated with these things are pretty astronomical.
Yeah, they spent $1.4 billion, according to the report that we just talked about, that how much is upcoding costing. So they have to recoup that and then, of course, make their money. So it's pretty tough.
And that's a conservative number. I'm going to tell you, from what we're seeing, you know, I think that's a really, really conservative number.
Wouldn't you think too, Jeff, just to speculate on the primary care physician, that the insurance companies would incentivize them by default? Because if they can keep somebody from being sick, the insurance company should be the one who's paying those primary care physicians who are supposed to keep you less sick to not get into the expensive side of things. You'd think there'd be massive incentives for the insurance company to do that.
Eric, you're gonna have to schedule the hour for me to get rid of that mythology. Literally part of these contracts with the insurance companies that we're talking about have many of these TPAs actually taking spread on the medical claims, that there is spread on the medical claims in addition to the fees as well. But I'm telling you, that's another. Hope is not a strategy. That's what I want you to take from our discussion today, that we are seeing transformation in the healthcare marketplace because of technology. I'm generally positive about the way things are going.
Awesome. And as far as a consumer goes, as far as what we could do as consumers, like you talked about my scenario, what tool would you suggest as an AI tool that maybe just the average person can leverage? Would it be just ChatGPT? Would it be just what's out there?
Yeah, the one that I like the most, and hopefully not an advertisement, is Perplexity, and because it covers all of those different tools separately.
Awesome. Perplexity. Yep. We'll check it out.
Yep.
So thank you, Jeff. Managing Director, Co-Founder, Judy Group. Any way people want to get a hold of you? Any information you want to give out? A phone number, anything?
Jeff@judygroup.com.
We'll have you back if you wouldn't mind.
I'd love it.
All right. It was a great conversation.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
And I hope you guys enjoyed it. I want to thank you guys for all joining us here on the show and calling in. Without you guys calling in, it'd be Mike talking about my kids and Dennis talking about his cats. So we're glad that didn't happen. And I want to thank Mike G for posting everything over at Computer Talk with Tab and our Facebook pages. And again, thank you, Jeff, for really opening our eyes to AI. I knew it would be a good conversation, but man, I'm tired afterwards here. This is a, that was a lot to think about, but we do appreciate it, sir.
Loved it. Thank you.
All right. And thank you, Carolyn, for producing. We'll see you guys next Saturday.
And remember, we want you to be geeks too.